Welcome to another On The Record podcast. This, of course, will be a special edition podcast because it's not just about me, Mike Graham, and him, Mike Parry.
That's right.
It is, in fact, Ask Porky. And this is where you basically try and solve as many problems as you can in as short a space of time as you can for the people listening.
I regard our listeners as our flock.
Indeed.
I regard them as our people. And I want to open myself up to helping people to get their lives right, sort problems out, and generally enjoy a better existence.
Yes. And, of course, what you can do, and normally what we do is ask you to post your questions on Twitter, on Facebook. Porky will answer them as quickly and as often as he possibly can.
Broadchurch is the answer to the first question.
Broadchurch?
Broadchurch. You asked me earlier, just before we started this broadcast, what was the name of the programme made at West Bay in Dorset?
Right.
Broadchurch.
Broadchurch. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. Second question in that case comes from Darren, who's posted this on Facebook. I worry a lot about challenges in the working day. What can I do to embrace uncertainty?
Well, uncertainty is a terrible thing, but you have to face it head on. Now, you know, many, many years ago when Mr. Graham and I were brought up in the rough and tumble of Fleet Street and the, you know, the hard knock era, if you went to anybody and said, I feel a bit anxious today, if you went to anybody and said, you know, I feel a little unsure and I'm feeling a bit fragile and all that kind of stuff, it would be a sign of weakness. Today it's not. And if you are suffering anxiety in a workplace, you should go to people and tell them. Because your life can be wrecked by the misery of going to work. Work should be something. This guy did say in work, didn't he, Darren?
He did. The working day, he said.
The working day. Darren, let me tell you this, my friend. Work should be something you want to do every day. Because you've got to remember, most of us spend most of our time working. That's the biggest lump of time in our 24-hour day.
Yes.
You could say, no, it's not. It's sleeping or it's being with the family. It's not. Because in this day and age, with mobile phones, with laptops, with every conceivable communication facility at hand, you are working most of the day.
Yeah.
So your job's got to be good. You've got to enjoy your job. You've got to get something out of your job. And if you haven't got that sense of satisfaction, feel anxious about the fact you're not... One of the worst things in work, Mike, is not being respected for what you do.
Yes.
Not being told occasionally by the person who employs you, you've done a good job.
Yeah.
Or not being told occasionally you've done a bad job.
Uh-huh.
It's terrible to be, you know, floating around in a morass
in
of...
A vacuum.
Not, in a vacuum and not knowing this.
He's worried about uncertainty, maybe about the future.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you feel that uncertain about the future of your job, there's only one option. You go to the person who employs you or your line manager and say, I want to have a conversation, please, about how things are.
Uh-huh.
And get rid of the uncertainty. You've got to remember, with every problem in life, if you don't hit it head on, it will hit you head on.
Porky says, Adam, will 2019 finally be the year when the Two Mics live show hits Marbella?
Well, Adam, we have great ambitions for the live show. Let me tell you this. We've got the show coming up at the Shepherd's Bush Empire on December the 16th, I think, Sunday night. We're looking forward to that very much because we haven't been on the stage for a year.
No.
And we've got a bumper show coming up. After that, we have been approached to do shows in various places, including Sydney, Australia.
Dubai.
Dubai. Sydney, the Royal Opera House, obviously, not the main theatre there, but a subsidiary theatre inside the Sydney Opera House building, probably seating about 800 or 900 people.
Uh-huh.
And we're assessing the options. The thing is, we are very busy these days. There are many new areas of work for the Two Mics to get involved in. But as you've asked, Adam, we appreciate your concern. We will further research where we can get out on the road next year.
OK. Aaron says this. If you could cook a fish finger pyramid for any current Everton player, who would it be and why?
Well, you know, footballers don't eat fish finger pyramids. Footballers have very strict diets these days, which are made up for them by dieticians inside the club.
They have their own chefs a lot.
They have their own chefs, even at home. Even some of them go home and have their own chefs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if I could, you know, make a fish finger pyramid for anybody who's been an Everton player, who's still alive, he would, of course, be Wayne Rooney.
Yes.
And I got into a lot of trouble
He'd
recently.
He'd probably like a fish finger pyramid.
I'm sure he would. He's a boy of working-class stock from Liverpool, and that's the sort of thing his mum will have given him as a kid, fish fingers and chips.
Yeah.
Hey, Wayne, get in here for your tea.
For your beard's
I've got your fish fingers and chips. Come on, it's your favourite. And your frozen peas.
Yeah.
And recently I said that Rooney was one of the truly great Everton players. Got a lot of people heaped a scorn on me and said he was only there in total for 3 years of his life.
Mm.
Yeah, but he was still the greatest 17-year-old player in the world at the Euro Championships in 2004 in Lisbon, and he was an Everton player. So the answer, Rooney.
Stephen says this on Twitter. Do you agree with trophy hunting as a sport, Porky?
Well, It depends what you're talking about trophies. If you're talking about shooting animals, I totally abhor it. If you're talking about trophy hunting as in a sense of achievement, because let's face it, people like Lewis Hamilton pick up a trophy, every time they win a race.
Yeah.
Trophy hunting in terms of ambition and wanting to be the best and the pursuit of excellence is a very good thing. Mm. Trophy hunting to go around shooting defenceless animals,
yeah.
Bastards!
Right, you're not keen. Brad says, you might not like this one, I'm afraid, right. Porky, but it's a very, very good question. How many trophies do you think Liverpool will win this season?
I think Liverpool will win this season as many trophies as they've won so far under Mr. Klopp. Zero, OK?
Because controversial.
Very
controversial,
well,
that.
Well, there is a certain feeling, and this is also a feeling amongst my friends who are Spurs fans, that some clubs are just destined not to win a trophy,
really?
Okay? Because teams like Liverpool and Spurs should be able to mop up things like the League Cup and the FA Cup without a shadow of a doubt.
What about the Champions League?
Well, the Champions League is on another level altogether. What I'm saying is, whilst you've got resources to take on the Champions League, and Spurs, I'm afraid, have failed so far in the Champions League tournament this season.
Liverpool
one point
have
out
not
of nine.
Failed, though, have they? I
mean, no,
they
Liverpool
did
haven't
well
failed.
Last year.
But Liverpool, if they go further than they got in the Champions League last year, means they'll win it because they were the beaten finalists last year.
Yeah.
But some would say that Mr. Klopp, having now lost five consecutive finals in which he's taken his team to, both his previous team...
Are you saying he's not a winner?
Well, I'm saying that he can't get it over the line, and neither can Mr. Pochettino. So I am the easiest thing for me to say, because only one team can win the League Cup, one team can win the FA Cup, one team can win the Champions League and the Premier League. I'm going to say that Liverpool won't win a trophy this
Bad
season.
News, Liverpool fans.
I'll have to admit that I think Everton won't either, unless we get lucky in the FA Cup.
Okay. John says this, Dear Porky, I'm going to write a novel. Any advice about how many words per day I should aim for? I work full time, so it would only be in the evenings.
When I've written books, right, and I've written some great books, and the best book I probably wrote was the biography of Joe Cole, great footballer. I can write about 1,000 words an hour, and I can't do more than 3 hours a day.
That's a lot.
It's an awful lot.
3,000 words a day is a lot.
It's an awful lot.
Did you not find as well, though, when you've done that?
Yeah.
It's a serious question. Because I'm doing it at the moment.
Yes.
Sometimes you do that and then you read it back and you think, actually, that's not very good. So I'm going to do that again.
Yes, you can. But the other thing I should stress is that you can only write 1,000 words an hour if you're writing about something you know every detail about. I've sometimes written 500 words a day in 3 hours because of the research and the double checking and the treble checking you have to put into writing a book, even if it's a novel. Because if it's a novel, you've got to get your facts right. You can't describe a murder in a London Underground tube station unless you've been there and had a look and see what it's all like.
I didn't know you'd written a novel.
Hey?
I didn't know you'd written a novel.
I haven't written a novel. But what I'm saying is I've written factual books.
I see.
Usually about footballers.
Well, you say factual.
Yeah, absolutely factual. Well, absolutely factual. Nobody's ever sued me for anything I've written.
Well, yes. Because you wrote Alan Brazil's book,
yes,
right?
I did.
And you told me that even he couldn't remember what he'd done.
Well, he couldn't, so I had to find...
So how do you know it's factual?
Well, it's factual because in those days, there was no internet and all that. I had to go to libraries in Ipswich and in London and in Scotland, in Glasgow.
Not to mention all the pubs you have to go to.
Exactly, and check out all the facts of Al's life, because Al is a very, very social creature, and he spent most of the last 30 years socialising, and a lot of the facts of his life have passed him by.
Okay.
So the answer to my question is, if you can write 1,000 a day, and that takes you an hour and a half or 2 hours, you're doing very well.
Indeed. Tarquin says, would you agree to be a host on the updated version of Blankety Blank, call it Plankety Plank, where the great unwashed winner gets a Plankety Plank checkbook and a £3,000 Beatles pen?
I think that'd be a brilliant competition. Call it Plankety Plank. It wouldn't have to be down and out who came on that. It would just be people who had to apply to the show and had to fill in a form which said, why do you believe you are an outstanding plank? And then when we got the answer to that, then Mr. Graham and I would set it up and co-host it. And yes, I think it's a great idea, but I wouldn't give away my £3,000 Beatles pen under any circumstances. The people who were backing the show would have to come up with their own prizes.
Here's one from Paul.
Yeah.
He says, hi, Porky. I've agreed to have the family over for Christmas dinner at our house this year and just want to know when is it best to start the Blado in Modo, because I'm worried I'm going to get too pissed to cook and completely ruin the day as I'm going to be doing all the cooking myself.
Now, is that from a gentleman or a lady?
It's from a man called Paul.
Paul, OK. Paul, let me tell you this. I think you made a mistake in taking on the role of chef on Christmas Day.
All right.
Now, Christmas Day is the one day of the year when I actually love going into a pub to talk to people, because most of the time when I go to pubs, I don't like talking to people, OK?
Yeah.
I have things to do. I have lots of journals to read. Excuse me.
You're right.
I don't really want people coming up and bothering me, you know, without being unsociable and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But I don't like pub banter. I don't like pub talk. Mm. I don't like leaning on the bar and exchanging
with,
you know,
strangers.
Yeah, exactly. No. I don't want to talk to a stranger about the fact that the bus service is no fucking good. You know, no. I don't want to talk to a stranger about Liverpool's result last night.
No.
I've got better things to do.
No.
However, on Christmas Day, there is a completely different atmosphere in pubs, particularly down in Stockbroker Belt.
Yes.
So most Christmas days, and I have to say we're a very sort of traditional family and the ladies do the cooking in our house.
Right.
So my two sisters, because we'll have it in one of their houses,
Including Sue Ellen.
Including Sue Ellen.
Well, she must have some advice for you when you start the blathering.
Well, she would. Sue Ellen's cunning, because she will say that the only reason she's got the bottle of sherry open is to add to the cooking. Mm. You see what I mean?
I mean, are you one of those traditional families that has? I mean, it depends obviously on how old the kids are, but when we were younger and we had younger kids, we'd sometimes crack a bottle of champagne. First thing in the morning.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely, with breakfast.
While you're opening the presents.
Yes, that's right. On Christmas Day, breakfast, which was always a cooked breakfast, because you didn't usually have Christmas dinner until about 4 o'clock.
Right.
And we would definitely actually have Buck's Fizz.
Okay.
Champagne with orange in it.
You, of course,
know.
Don't drink champagne, do you?
Well, yeah, but if you remember, we've been on a few trips where at the end of it, I have drunk a lot of Buck's Fizz.
No,
coming
know.
Back from America.
Yeah.
Do you remember we came back from either Glasgow or Newcastle once to Paddington State to... Which was Paddington Station? It must have been Cardiff.
No, it must have been Cardiff.
Yeah.
No, because I drove to Cardiff, so it wasn't there.
Well,
I think it was when we were in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
And we had to come back to do a show.
Yeah.
Do you remember at Talk Radio?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
That was
but we got
why.
Into one station. Oh, was it King's Cross?
Oh, no,
it was King's Cross.
It was Newcastle, you're thinking of.
It was, yeah, that's right.
Of Newcastle.
And we got into that lovely bar in King's Cross where it was £9 a glass.
That's right.
And we had, they're called mimosas for the first time.
Yeah.
So anyway, the answer to your question is that have a bottle of champagne with breakfast, a bit of Buck's Fizz, and then most of the family who aren't tied up in the kitchen would get into a couple of people carriers and get round to the local
booth. It's quite hard to get those on a Christmas day, isn't it?
What?
Is it quite hard to get one of those on a Christmas
day?
You
book them in advance.
Do you?
We book them usually on, you know, a week before. Yeah. So when a couple of people carriers please turn up here, 11 o'clock, and the pub usually opens at 11, we get there quarter past. And then I genuinely feel the spirit of Christmas is such that I go around the pub, chatting to people, saying hello, and if they want to have a picture taken on Christmas Day or something like that, I have no problem whatsoever.
They must be absolutely delighted.
Yeah. Yeah.
One from Paul on Twitter. How far do I stretch dishonesty in order to become successful in my career?
Well, I don't think anybody should be dishonest. I think the best way to go through life is to be as honest as you possibly can. Now, an awful lot of people have been dishonest with me over the years, and I've not retaliated sufficiently, and I should have done.
Uh-huh.
You know, when bastards, you know, start saying to you, oh, we're changing this, Mike, and stepping you down from this show because of this reason.
Right.
And you know it's not for the reason that, oh, your health's in question.
Right.
Or it's not for the reason that, oh, well, we think it works better the other way.
Mm.
It's just their malice and their envy and the fact that they're so jealous
What's
of your success.
What's this going to do with your dishonesty, though?
What I'm saying is I don't even retaliate with dishonesty.
Right.
I just call them fucking horrible people.
Okay.
Bastards, right?
Okay.
And... And I get on with life, and I'm delighted to say that attitude has meant that I've been a serial and lifelong winner.
Indeed. Yeah. Kelly says, a question to lighten the mood on Twitter. In your opinion, should the death penalty be brought back?
Well, I mean, that's such a detailed one that I'm not going to go into it for more than a few seconds. The problem with the death penalty is it'll never get through Parliament in this country. And some would say, well, you know, we had a referendum on Brexit. Shouldn't we have a referendum on the death penalty?
Yes.
If politicians will never give you a referendum on the death penalty because they know that 90% of the people in this country would vote to bring it back.
It's possible. I don't know if that's actually true, though. I mean, I know that whenever the tabloid newspapers do a poll, they always get more people saying they want to bring
it back. That's right,
But actually, once you get into the nitty-gritty of whether it's, you know, how do you do it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, does it work?
And you
is
have
it
to
from
find
a deterrent?
No government wants to be the government that brought back the death penalty because, of course, it is all about the sanctity of life.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question is there shouldn't be a poll on it. I'm pretty happy with the way things go, but I do wish that life could mean life. And it does, by the way, for a lot of crimes in this country now.
Well,
life
it does for
mean.
The victims.
It certainly does for the victims, but there are full term, like for instance, you mentioned Fred West earlier in an earlier broadcast we did. Well, Rose West will never get out of Durham jail, or is it Wakefield, whichever one she's in, because she has a full term order on her, which means she'll die in jail, just as people like the horrible and hated Myra Hindley and Brady did.
Yeah, Ian Brady, the Moors murderers.
Yeah.
Andrew says this, does the Porkmeister have a second housekeeper at his penthouse in the crime capital? If yes, why does she never get a mention?
No, I don't, because I'm not there as often as I am at my home in Stockbroker Belt.
Mm.
Now, the point is that in Stockbroker Belt, my housekeeper is a personal asset to me. And she not only does the house, she does the washing, she does the garden, she organises, you know, things like, you know, getting the boiler repaired, decorators, all that kind of stuff. Whereas down on the coast, because I do not need as much attention for the place, I use a commercial firm which visits and does the basics, really, once a month, because that's all I need. So it's not the same relationship.
More questions still on Ask Porky.
Okay.
Many of them coming in from all points of the country.
Excellent.
And some from around the world.
Lovely.
As well. Different places. Here's one from Ross. It says, Porky, coming to Christmas show all the way from Newcastle this December. Mm. Where should I partake in some mild bladderation after the show?
Well, after the show, there's a very nice pub on the corner of Shepherd's Bush Green, uh-huh, next to the theatre, which I think is called something like the Sizemon or something.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
It's something like, they've got live music there.
Yeah, strange sort of name, but few people get in there after the show. But of course, Shepherd's Bush Green's pretty lively and active place, plenty of places around there. But you may want to say to yourself after the show, let's get to the West End, which is not very far away on the tube. And if it's a, you know, a one-off visit to London, you might prefer to spread your wings into Piccadilly or somewhere like that.
Piccadilly or something like that, absolutely right. A lot of people have been commenting because of the picture that we put out initially of you standing by Rolls-Royce.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to ask you a sort of general question about that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have asked about your choice of clothing.
Yes.
Basically, why the trousers and jacket colour are mismatched.
They're not mismatched.
This one comes from Paul.
Yeah.
He says, is it true that Porky is also suffering from being colourblind, as well as having a frozen shoulder, diabetes, acute heart failure, and uncontrollable liar syndrome? Which seems a bit harsh, to be honest.
No, sciatica, I think they missed out there.
Sciatica, surely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But a lot of people wondering if that car, the Rolls Royce, if you remember the picture that you were taken next to,
yes,
which has got rather unfortunate number plate,
yes,
we're asking whether or not, you know, you're not, you just don't know how to dress.
I don't care
what
they say.
Asking.
I dress in the inimitable style, which represents my character. Okay.
Yeah.
The fact that I had a black blazer on and slightly different coloured chinos and black shoes is very much my colour code.
Yeah, okay.
If I didn't have a blue and white striped shirt on that day, it's because I had a dark-coloured shirt on. I prefer dark-coloured shirts, OK? So I don't care. What's this guy's name again?
I think it was Paul.
All right, Paul. Well, yeah, thanks very much for your question, but don't bother me again with such banal questions about drivel.
Michael says, how many hours a week does Porky's house cleaner work, and is she paid fairly?
She's paid very fairly, way above the rate. I would say it's £25 an hour, I think, and hours a week. Well, what does it matter? 6 to 8,
yeah,
or 6 to 8. It depends how much needs doing in a particular week.
I mean, you could say that it's too intrusive of a question to answer if you wish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, gets a very good deal. Put it that way, and a bonus at Christmas and holiday pay in the summer.
Stephen says this, why is Mr. Parry still unmarried, as debonair millionaires usually have no problem attracting beautiful women?
Well, perhaps I didn't want to get married. That is the answer to the question, because I have been plenty of opportunities over the years, but I never saw myself, and I have explained this quite a number of times, I never saw myself settling into domesticity, always been too restless to get on with the next project, the next opportunity, the next challenge. And I say, quite selfishly, I always felt that a marital situation would have held up my ability to move quickly into new opportunities.
Indeed. Here's one from the Two Mics fan club. A colleague at work insists on wearing incredibly tight trousers, which unfortunately draw unwanted attention to his panicular structure.
Yes.
Should I draw his attention to it and ask him to desist, or should I allow him to continue?
Well, if you find it offensive, then you've got to have a word with the line manager and say, look, this is a bit offensive. I don't know why anybody would wear trousers so tight that their bollocks would bulge out, you know. The Australians have a word for it. They call it the budgie smugglers,
yes,
okay?
They do.
Those are the shorts they wear. These guys who go like lifeguard training and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
the budgie smugglers. But nobody should wear those on a day-to-day basis. And anybody who's offended by somebody else's dress code, so for instance, you know, over the years we've had ladies in an office who've worn particularly inappropriate clothes in a certain situation, maybe a low-cut top or a very high miniskirt or something like that. And you have to have words, because if it puts other people out, you know, if other people feel uncomfortable in the company of a colleague, then that has to stop.
Can I please have an update, says Jamie, on your stolen, now brought back fixed chair? Is it as good as new, or did the lad rip you off or do a terrible job?
No, it's brilliantly good, and he did a fantastic job, bended it underneath and all that kind of stuff. I've had it steam cleaned. I get that done once a year and all that kind of stuff. It's got extra sort of arm covers and back covers and all sorts of things. So it's in great shape. Thank you for your interest.
No, thank you very much indeed. Luke says, a Christmas question, how many people do you buy Christmas presents for?
Me?
Yes.
I buy Christmas presents for every member of my family several times over.
All right.
And one particular colleague at work who's very helpful.
Somebody at work?
Yeah.
Now, who do you buy presents for at work?
Well, just, you know, if I see
somebody...
Are you
going to buy me a Christmas present this year?
No, but I might buy your children Christmas presents, really? You know, because I've done that in the past couple of years, as
that's
you
true.
Can allude to.
Please don't buy another plane to share, though, because, you know, that didn't go well.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, they...
You know, they crashed it into... Well, I crashed it, actually, into the tree.
Exactly. As a father, you should have been able to discipline them and said to them, this is for both of you, and then, of course, stupidly, you thought, you know, father knows, dad knows best, put the plane together and then smash it to pieces. So
well,
I hope that
fault.
Doesn't happen again.
Michael says, on the same theme, the best time to do your Christmas shopping?
Well, you can do your Christmas shopping any time you like. I mean, when I was a youngster, a lot of it was done on Christmas Eve after I came out of the pub, because you've got to remember that pubs, you know, closed at sort of 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Eve, didn't open till 5:30. Mm. So you had 2 hours there to go around doing a bit of Christmas shopping. It was always frantic and you never knew what to buy anybody. But, I mean, that was part of the fun. Mm. And then you'd sort of come back into the pub at 5:30 with this bag full of stuff.
Right.
And then you'd get
and you'd leave it in the pub because you got too bladderated.
Might leave it in the pub or might get home at 11:30 and then think, who's going to wrap all this?
Yeah.
And then your mum would wrap it for you, you know, before the morning and all that kind of stuff. And then you'd go through the whole cycle again.
Tom says this.
Yeah.
I'm currently a trainee reporter at the Press Association, where I understand Porky was once head honcho.
Yes,
I was. Does he have any advice for aspiring journalists?
Well, aspiring journalists have to do what anybody else does in any other job. You have to be absolutely dedicated, ruthlessly dedicated to your job. You have to apply yourself. You have to learn from those who've done it before you, but also see the opportunity and seize the opportunity. And the thing that most employers admire above everything else is initiative. So never, ever be reluctant to speak up. As a young reporter, you might be a trainee, you might not yet recognise a story. You know, one of the first questions you're ever given when you're a trainee reporter is, what is the most important story out of this?
Right.
5,000 people die in earthquake in China.
Yeah.
120 people lose their lives in a blaze in Brasilia, Brazil.
Mm.
Or third question, Diana, Princess of Wales, has
died
in a car crash. And the number of kids who said, oh, it's definitely got to be China because there's 5,000 people died there. You've got to learn a news value.
Yes.
Learn the news value as quickly as you can.
Okay. How about this between from, where are we? KB. He says, I've not seen the Nureyev film. I didn't know there was a new Nureyev film out.
No.
Can Mike Perry please tell me which actor portrays him getting Rudolph's final bedside interview?
Oh, well, that would have to be somebody who was up to the game, you know what I mean? Somebody who got over the wall into Nureyev's villa on the Isle of St. Barts.
St. Barts, yes.
St. Bartholomew, which is, I think, the most exclusive Caribbean island, is it not?
Well,
you know,
I mean, there's a lot of exclusive. I'd say Mustique is a little bit more exclusive.
Mustique's
as much
a private
as,
island.
No, it's not private, but
it's
exclusive.
Pretty much private.
Well, then, therefore, it's exclusive.
Well, yeah, but Bartholomew is the most exclusive for those who can go there. For
so
instance,
it's not exclusive.
So, for instance, Mr. Abramovich holds his Christmas, his New Year Eve party on his estate in St. Bartholomew. Yeah,
okay.
So that's pretty bloody exclusive, isn't it?
I wouldn't try climbing over that wall if I were you.
No, I wouldn't either. No,
you might find yourself
getting a few Russian people
stuck up your backside.
Yeah, and I would say that what you're asking now is somebody to play the young Mike Parry. Can't think of anybody better than maybe Eddie Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, yeah.
You see yourself as that. Here's one from Richard. Mm. Having conquered dilated cardiomyopathy, sciatica, diabetes, and general plankery, what will you be performing as your next medical miracle?
Well, it depends on whatever comes along. You know, if it comes along, I'll face up to it. At the moment, I'm suffering quite severe headaches.
Are you?
Yeah, I don't know why. But
that could be bad. That could be high blood pressure, apparently.
Well, they start. No, it's not. I had my blood pressure tested quite recently. Yeah, because I have blood tests all the time.
Well, maybe you get a brain tumour.
But it's Well, I don't think so because it's on the outside of my skull.
Outside.
Starts on the top of my head.
Yeah.
Goes down the back of my head and it goes into the neck and shoulder muscles.
Mm.
And I think it may well be.
Is it very painful?
It's
like intense pain, like for a very short period of time.
No, it's a ongoing? Constant throbbing pain.
Oh, is it?
And it makes my head feel like, seriously, like I've got one of those old-fashioned diving bells on my head. No, it does. It does, honestly.
Well, that's not right.
My head feels
so... Well, go and see the bloody doctor.
I have been. I went to see
the doctor. What
does the
doctor say?
Well, I went to see a chiropractor first.
Right.
And he said, look, I can't examine you until you go and get a medical diagnosis and an X-ray because you might have broken something in your neck or something, you know?
Oh, really?
So I go and see the doctor, and the doctor did all the tests and said, I don't think there's anything broken.
Uh-huh.
So I've worked out what I think it is you know, that you recently acquired what we call a satchel?
Yes.
Like a man bag?
Yeah, yeah.
I've been carrying one for
years. A briefcase?
Yeah.
But it's got a shoulder strap?
Your shoulder strap. I've been carrying one for years, yeah. And I think that has disjointed the muscles
really?
Around my neck. Yeah,
well, I've
really
noticed
do.
The last few times I've seen you, you're not carrying
it. I'm not carrying it.
Well, hang on. Well, so the obvious question
too
is,
painful, yeah.
What have you been putting, where have you been putting all the stuff you used to carry in the satchel?
In my pockets. That's why I wear a jacket, because right. In the winter you can wear a jacket and put some
yeah,
in your pockets.
When it gets warmer in
well,
summer.
Well, when they're warmer, I'm going to have to think about it again.
Mm.
Think about it again.
Right.
And in fact, the very, very worst fucking scenario of all
yeah.
is that I fucking hate rucksackers,
right.
But I might
you
end
might
up
have to
having
have
to be a rucksacker because if I can't stand weight around my...
Yeah.
Neck and shoulders,
yes.
I might have to become one of those pathetic bums
yeah.
on the tube.
Bumping into people.
You know, carrying the equivalent of a wardrobe around
yeah.
on my back with
well,
the amount of journals
have,
I need.
Well, you don't have a big, huge one, do you?
I do.
You
I
can
do.
Have one of those small ones you just put over one shoulder.
No, I can't
That's
stand
quite sort
that.
Of trendy.
Can't stand
then you
that.
Might, people might think you no. went for the BBC.
No.
All right, J-Mo says this. If you were Prime Minister, firstly, who's your number two?
Yeah.
And secondly, what would you do first?
If I became Prime Minister, I would embark on a campaign over the 5 years of Prime Ministership to reduce taxes to the lowest in Europe.
Right.
In my view, having been a student of economics, every economy that lowers its taxes thrives, and every economy that's always put up its taxes eventually withers.
Mm.
High taxation is the death of freedom and society because it means people are trapped into not being able to spend their own money. And, of course, the state loves that, because then the state takes over, like those ridiculous fucking taxes that Gordon Brown levied on us.
You keep blaming Gordon Brown.
You know, for everything. Well, I mean, under Gordon Brown era, in the first 5 years of Gordon Brown era, the council tax for most people in the middle bands doubled. Went up from about £500 a year to about £1,000 a year.
Yeah.
And that's because Gordon Brown said to local authorities, just start spending. Start spending and raise your own money, the government will not have to subsidise you. And if that means taking on hundreds of people who now get gold-plated pensions on the back of the council tax, which
yes.
you and I pay, it's a fucking disgrace. So lower taxation means a thriving economy, gives people more freedom, generates a feeling of wellness because you've got money in your pockets.
Yes.
People don't have money in their pockets.
Yes.
And that would be my eternal campaign, but at the same time making absolutely sure that those in society who need our help most get it, and get it better than they've had it before.
What about a new number two?
A number two?
A new number two.
I wouldn't need a
number
two.
Well, you'd have to have a deputy prime minister.
No, you
Everybody
don't.
Has a deputy
no,
prime
no,
minister.
No, they don't.
I mean, don't forget John Prescott, who was deputy prime minister.
There is
Tony
no
Blair.
Deputy prime minister at the moment.
Yeah, no, there isn't one.
No.
But, you know,
yeah.
today's government is not exactly a great
no.
Yardstick for how successful
I would
be,
not
is
need
it?
One. I would not need a deputy. I would take control of all the major issues.
Yeah,
I would launch all the major
but
initiatives.
But you would just work all the time, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course I would. That's what the job of the Prime Minister is to do, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd be at the forefront of change, revolution, low taxes and thriving prosperity.
Really?
Okay.
Okay. How about this one from Mark, who says, listen to old podcasts from May and June. Porky's predictions are so incorrect. Does he think there is some kind of Porky jinx?
Like, could you name one, please?
He hasn't named any.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I think we all know that you...
Load of balderdash and drivel.
Your predictions are not normally particularly
no,
good.
No, don't agree.
Are they?
Oh, right, really?
Are you saying that your predictions are good?
Who predicted that Burnley would beat Chelsea on the
that
first
the
day of
the
season
of the
2 years
season,
ago?
2 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah.
That's the only one you keep mentioning.
No, no.
2 years ago.
No.
You also predicted at the weekend, I think you'll find, of the American Grand Prix, that Lewis Hamilton would win the Drivers' Championship, and it turned out he had to wait until the Mexican Grand Prix before that could happen.
But that was the stupidity of his team, the Mercedes team. We admit they screwed up the game plan.
Okay.
So that's not my fault, okay?
All right. Paul says this. Hi, Porky. How much do you think that Andy Carroll is being paid to do those Vanquist credit card adverts? I didn't know he was.
I didn't know he was as well.
I do know that
Andy Carroll's getting about £100,000 a week as a professional footballer, but hasn't played for a good deal of time. In fact, of all the games that Andy Carroll could have played in his career as a professional footballer, he's missed half of them.
Yeah.
through injury.
Yes.
So that means...
Even when he does come back, he doesn't come back for long, does he?
He doesn't come back for long. And the thing is, it's not necessarily his fault. He is such a big, gangly boy.
Yeah.
And Duncan Ferguson had this problem as well, that if you launch 16 or 17 stone of human being, which you are, off the ground, to head a ball, you get an elbow in the ribs, because that's the way a defender... You know,
he does go in very hard.
He goes in very hard. That's where a defender, you know, distracts you from getting your head to the ball. When you land on ankles which have 17 stone of weight coming down on them. You land on knees that have 17 stone of weight. When you fall...
Also, there's something to do with, I think, as well, the adrenaline rush.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
That you feel that you actually kind of outperform your own self.
That's right.
And then suddenly you come down to earth and you really realise you're injured.
When you fall bigger than a little guy because there's more of your weight coming down on top of you. It's like a whale lying on a beach, can't breathe because of the weight of its body on its rib cage and all that kind of stuff. So I have some sympathy, but people have to realise that huge players like that, excepting, actually, Peter Crouch, who, for such a big man...
He didn't get injured too much, did he?
Didn't get injured too much. Still playing, by the way.
Yeah.
But Peter Crouch was very tall, but he was a beanpole.
He's more like a praying mantis.
And like a praying mantis. He seems to hangs be. In the air and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Andy Carroll, Duncan Ferguson, players like that, Mick Harford was a bit the same.
Yeah.
They are rumbustious, bulldozing players, and rumbustious, bulldozing players who are told by their manager to get stuck into those defenders will always suffer.
OK. Frankie, as a commercial question for you, how many pork scratchings do you sell a week?
Well, I can't tell you the exact figure at the moment, but, I mean, boxes and boxes and boxes of them go out
They're
of the...
They're very good, by the way.
They are very
Even
good.
I would endorse them.
Go out of the factory in Wigan, Wigan, Lancashire.
Aye. Home of Kay Burley.
Home of Kay Burley. Every week, and... And they're in huge demand. Some of you might say, well, I never see them in the shops. Well, you own it in the south of England.
No.
Because the people who produce them, Oppenshaws, have something like 20 different brands of pork scratchings, and they distribute them throughout the country.
Mm.
I've seen plenty of Oppenshaw snacks pork scratchings in Tesco's, but you go up to the north of England, walk into a petrol station there, I'm delighted to say I see my own face staring back at me from the racks of pork scratchings.
We should get people
Parry,
to
pork
take pictures of your stuff on
Good
sale
idea.
And
Good
send
idea.
Them into our Twitter account.
Yes.
One from Paul who says, what is your best Halloween story, Porky?
Halloween?
Halloween story. I don't know if that means covering something on Halloween or doing something on Halloween.
I'm not big on Halloween, to be honest, and I generally speak in, ignore the knocks on the door and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Sometimes, the trick-or-treaters and all that.
Trick-or-treaters. I'll sometimes shout through the door and maybe, you know, give them some money through the letterbox or something like that. I don't like opening the door.
No.
And I haven't really got a Halloween story, I suppose.
How do they get all the way upstairs to the old drug dealer's gate?
Oh, because somebody else will let them in, you know what I mean? And they'll go to somebody on the ground floor or something like that.
Yeah.
But I suppose the Halloween story you can tell is about the films.
Yes. Jamie Lee Curtis.
I've never seen one.
You've never seen a Halloween film?
I've never seen a Halloween film, but I read today that she's in a sequel 30 years after the first one. Is that right?
Well, the first Halloween film, which was a John Carpenter-directed film, who was then known as a bit of a sort of cult figure, very, very smart, very clever, very fashionable.
Mm.
She was the young sort of teenage girl who starred in Halloween, which is a sort of terrifying scenario, basically, where this kind of knife-wielding maniac.
Yes.
I think it's Jason, isn't it, in the Halloween ones, tries to kill her, wearing a hockey mask, you know?
Yes.
And so now, at the age of whatever she is, 60-something, she's now decided to reprise the role, I believe, and apparently it's the biggest grossing Halloween film ever.
Yeah.
It's the biggest, she put this tweet out the other day, the biggest grossing female lead film ever.
Right.
And she was going on about the whole, you know, isn't it great that women are taking charge of the movie business?
Yes.
And all that. I'm not sure I want to go and see it. The first Halloween film was great.
Yeah.
They made about another three or four, which weren't so good.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. One thing I would say about Halloween, this is a fact I got from one of my journals.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, you know, pumpkins obviously are very popular on Halloween
time. They certainly are.
And it's a huge commercial thing now, which I don't mind, because kids like it.
We never used to see pumpkins,
did we? No, we never see them, but kids like it, and that's great. The kids are having a great night out, that's great. Because also, so many, like, fireworks night comes up a week later, but that's now so regulated at sort of public fireworks events,
yes.
You don't see a lot of people doing them in the back garden anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So, but the one that I was just saying about pumpkins is that I read about a pumpkin farm. And it only sells pumpkins, so it makes all its money in the space of a month before Halloween's night.
Right.
But from that one farm alone, 150,000 tons of the mush inside the pumpkin is simply thrown away.
Yes.
And I believe the World Health Organization should get onto this and say, we could send all that to Africa or starving countries.
Pumpkin crap, do they?
No, they do. What about pumpkin soup? That's very popular.
Yeah, but I don't think you can make it with the stuff that you squeeze out of the middle.
You can. You can.
I think you need the actual hard bit of the fruit.
No, you don't. You don't need the outside. Mm. What you need is the stuff inside. You
it's
can
a bit
make
hot for soup in Africa, isn't it?
You can. Well, it's nutritious. You can have cold soup. You can have cold soup.
Might
yeah.
send us some gazpacho.
Yeah, well, why not? Yeah. Because, listen, the stuff you scrape out from the middle of a pumpkin is very nutritious food and would keep people alive.
Really?
I'm urging the World Health Organization to get onto it immediately.
Okay. The multimedia guy says, as a young man looking to emulate the success of the great Porky, what would be your five-step guide to success? Keeping it short and sweet.
There's only one guide to success, mate. Uh-huh. You've got to, A, want it.
Right.
B, try very hard.
Right.
C, be smarter than the average bear. D, never give up.
Yeah.
And C, praise the God that is money. Because
that's
the only thing that motivates you to success.
That sounds like 5 points.
Oh, that's
you
five
said
points.
There was only one. Why did Kate Eddy take you to court, says Buck?
Because the newspaper I worked for rewrote a story that
really?
I had written. Rewrote a story.
Are you sure?
The facts came out wrong.
Yeah.
And I had to carry the can.
Oh, yeah.
I was the victim, but I took it on the chin for the newspaper.
Do you feel like you were set up?
I was set up.
Really? Okay, final question from Tony. Dear Porky, why does your certificate say grammar skills 9 in Roman numerals?
What happens in modern day technology is that if you transpose a number like that, 11, which is X1, comes out as 1-9.
Really?
That's all.
Yeah.
It was 11. Everybody
it wasn't
knows
done
it's 11.
In the mirror, was it?
It wasn't done in the mirror. Everybody knows it's 11, okay?
Well, maybe one final question. Just
oh, yeah,
to squeeze one.
We keep getting the final questions.
One final. Well, that was the last final question.
Right.
This is now the final question from Celtic Warrior.
Mm.
If you ever decided to become an MP, which constituency would you represent? Chester, Southport, where?
If I became an MP, I'd want to represent the Kielder Forest in Northumberland.
Why would you think you should represent them?
Because I think it's a great part of the world and I intend to retire there.
Really?
Quite simple as that.
Okay, so you think you...
But I wouldn't want to be the MP anyway.
MPs get carpet-bagged.
They get bothered by everybody all the time. You know, my fucking rubbish hasn't been collected this week. What are you going to do about it, you know? I'm not interested
in
that.
Well, are you saying MPs have a hard time?
MPs have a... They have a bit of a hard time. They have a... They have a great life, £200,000 a year. I wouldn't mind looking after somebody's rubbish complaints. But I do believe an awful lot more needs to be done to make MPs, responsible for their activities.
I see. That was Ask Porky.
It certainly was.
Thank you to everyone who sent questions in. If you didn't get yours read out, we apologise. But there will be another Ask Porky coming up soon. We are the two mics. This is On The Record.
It is. Well, I don't think anybody should be dishonest. I think the best way to go through life is to be as honest as you possibly can. Now, an awful lot of people have been dishonest with me over the years, and I've not retaliated sufficiently, and I should have done.
Uh-huh.
You know, when bastards, you know, start saying to you, oh, we're changing this, Mike, and stepping you down from this show because of this reason.
Right.
And you know it's not for the reason that, oh, your health's in question.
Right.
Or it's not for the reason that, oh, well, we think it works better the other way.
Mm.
It's just their malice and their envy.
I see.
And the fact that they're so jealous
What's
of your success.
What's this going to do with your dishonesty, though?
What I'm saying is, I don't even retaliate with dishonesty.
Right.
I just call them fucking horrible people.
Okay.
Bastards, right?
Okay.
And I get on with life.
No.
And I'm delighted to say that attitude has meant that I've been a serial and lifelong winner.
Indeed.
I don't know why anybody would wear trousers so tight that their bollocks would bulge out, you know. The Australians have a word for it. They call it the budgie smugglers,
yes,
okay?
They do.
Those are the shorts they wear, these guys who go, like, lifeguard training and all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
The budgie smugglers. But nobody should wear those on a day-to-day basis. And anybody who's offended by somebody else's dress code, so, for instance, over the years, we've had ladies in an office who've worn particularly inappropriate clothes in a certain situation, maybe a low-cut top or a very high... mini skirt or something like that, and you have to have words, because if it puts other people out, you know, if other people feel uncomfortable in the company of a colleague, then that has to stop. It makes my head feel like, seriously, like I've got one of those old-fashioned diving bells on my head. No, it does, honestly.
Well, that's not right.